hall.
You have the tall chair. Songs from the Bridget chair.
Yes.
All right, we're going to have to... Someone will have to keep an eye behind me to make sure that nothing ever goes wrong with the with
sure.
that thing.
I'll keep watching.
All right. God, I mean, this is... We're bantering. We're
Hi, everybody.
Hey, everyone.
How's it going?
I mean, it's going
pretty well. Oh, that is a picture of some puppies that the audience cannot see.
Oh, can I see? Oh,
babies. Waffles.
Waffles.
Waffles is such a fun name for a dog.
That's going to be such a fucking different dynamic for this podcast.
Oh, sure, yeah. Way different.
We're just going to all be looking at each other the whole time.
Actually having a conversation.
It's I don't know if I'm prepared for it as the host. That's the fucked up part.
It'll be fine.
It's the person that generally keeps things going. But
it's like cat hairs on the mic. There you go.
Because of Ziggy's favorite activity.
Rubbing up against the microphone.
That'll do it.
And unplugging it.
I'm sure he misses it.
He likes the weird grating on it.
Yeah,
it feels
good for
odd on his body. Speaking of weird creatures, we got a dog underneath the table in the center of us who's just a fucking time... This is the time bomb under the table that fucking Hitchcock is talking about.
Just like, she's gonna freak out and start barking about any moment.
Yeah.
At a time unknown to us.
All it takes is one of us to get, like, incredibly heated and, like, in a single moment, and then, bam, it happens.
Yeah, she's gonna go nuts.
Put your phone down.
Put your phone down.
Please. I'm looking up the connections because it was on my other computer I normally record on.
What we've used, connected by cast or crew, deciding the next film, that's the gist. Put it on the list.
We had half of the stem going there, not the entirety.
How y'all been?
I haven't even introduced what this is. Hi everyone, and welcome to Put It on the List. I don't need a soundtrack.
Oh, okay.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Put It on the List, the bi-monthly, sometimes movie club where we all gather together and discuss a film of one of our choice, and the next person in line has to connect their film by either cast or crew. First person in the rotation, introduce yourself. One currently on their phone.
I'm Bridget.
So
and
professional.
I'm here in pog form.
She is. She's back.
You're not pogging, though. You're simply sitting there like a normal human being.
Yeah, I'd be like, oh.
What do you have to say to that? Yes, and?
I meant like, you know, P-A-W.
Number two in the rotation.
I'm Evie, and I'm here for this podcast as well.
And then number three in the rotation.
Hi, everyone. I'm Bree. I want you to be friends with me.
And I'm Jay, and we are all here sitting around a... physical table.
That was your fault. That was entirely your fault.
Not even
look at the waveform.
Oh my god.
You're gonna have to fix that.
No.
Biscay had to lick my foot so that she could get her stem.
I will not knock on the table this time when I say it, but we are here around a physical table with all four of us for once.
Just trust us that there's a table here.
Yeah. Junk ass card table.
Imagine there's a table that I did not knock on and the dog started barking immediately like someone was at the door. But last time I'm Put on the List, Bree... You had us watch Jet Li's The One.
I sure did.
Which was certainly a time.
It was a time.
And I sent us over to Baz Luhrmann's Romeo plus... Wait, Baz Luhrmann's William Shakespeare's
Romeo plus Juliet.
Is it phrased as Romeo Juliet?
I think it's just Romeo and Juliet.
It's like Hunter Hunter. You don't say the X, you know.
Yeah. But it's more fun to say Romeo plus Juliet.
It is more fun to say.
However, before we get to all that, How's everyone doing? Who wants to talk about the last couple of weeks?
Gosh.
Or days, more so, I guess.
I just went to a really gay social hangout with, like, our really cool neighbors who have become friends of mine. I had a wonderful, wonderful time dancing and getting messed up on mocktails. And, just being me.
How messed up can you even get on mocktails?
You forget, I have a sugar sensitivity.
Oh!
I felt yucky.
Is that what gave, like, sent you into the panic attack thing?
Yeah, probably was, because we had sugar like earlier, so like I didn't think about it, but I had one drink and I was like, oh no. But other than that, it was fun. It was really good. We had a wonderful time, I watched my friend DJ and it was just really great.
Ice cream is so fucking good.
Before Brie went to her social thing, we all went to a local ice cream place, or like just Japanese dessert place in general, and had delicious desserts.
Yeah, you and Bridget tried out something called Bingsu, which is like...
It's like shaved milk ice.
Yeah. And at the very least, yours looked really fucking good as someone who's...
Bridget's a good team.
I would fuck up either of those. I think I want to try that next time.
What all was on yours? I know it was the ube ice cream on top.
Ube and like...
Almond,
coconut, and like red bean.
Yeah,
bean. The break in there for me is the coconut, because I'm not a coconut person.
I don't like coconut flavor things, but I do like coconut itself.
I like everything to do with coconut. I'm a coconut slut. A coca slut, if you will. Actually, that sounds like I'm on coke. Never mind.
Yeah. Or high on chocolate, which you're definitely not, because, you know, we have the sugar issue that we were just discussing a moment ago.
Moderation is the name of my game. I'm going to see a doctor. But I also recently finished a little comic I was working on.
Literally, as I was setting up the table that set off the dog, you were finishing up a comic.
And, it's been a really long, as a digital artist, as any of you who've listened to this for a while know, this has probably been, like, the most involved project I've worked on for the longest amount of time, even beyond, like... I mean, it took me 2 weeks to make my VTuber, aside from little updates, but... Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, this has been, like, a month or so, and it's been really rewarding to see it come together. I'm really excited to release it, so...
I'm happy for you on that.
Yeah.
Evie, do you have anything you wanted to discuss in a recorded format?
There hasn't been too much going on. We've been, I've been playing Hades 2, which we've all started playing.
Except for Ryu.
And as far as I know, it doesn't really
play. I'm the most casual gamer. I play grindcore games. That's about it.
Yeah, so, like, Hades 2, that's pretty good. I've been continuing to play Trails through Daybreak. I don't know if I talked about it, but, like, I play that game, like... in 20-minute chunks before I go to sleep every night, and so, like, I'm coming up on 30 hours, and it's I don't know, it's good, it's compelling.
I feel like some people would argue that that's the best way to, like, experience, like, a really long JRPG, is just, like, divide it up into, like, just little chunks every day, and you slowly chip away at it.
Yeah,
really...
instead of binging for long amounts of time and absorbing and forgetting multiple bits of it, you can just be there for it.
Yeah,
and it works.
People do enjoy just, like, delving into that stuff and, like, going all the way through it, but it's, like, I can't keep up with it like that.
No, sure. Couldn't be me either.
Bridget, Miss on her phone, how was your trip down to Portland? How's it going?
My trip was fine, effectively just playing Hades 2 the entire time.
You brought some gifts down with you. I feel like we would be shirking our duties if we did not talk about the thing that we started watching last night in Charge Man Ken.
Oh, God,
yes.
Yeah.
Charge Man Ken, which I have been trying to make Jay watch for a good bit.
Well, here's the thing, is you are a connoisseur of bad media. And it takes a really specific, like, combination of elements for me to look at a bad thing and be like, that's got the fucking sauce.
Yeah.
And Chargeman Ken has the fucking sauce.
I want you all to realize, like, anyone listening, when you consider, like, the 80s anime era where you see things like Speed Racer and all that, that hand
that's not the 80s.
That's not the 80s.
That's like the 60s,
oh,
70s.
Shit. When was Chargeman Ken?
The 60s
also
or 70s.
60s. All right, fuck it. So that era of hand-drawn animation, I want you to consider something that makes Speed Racer in its original form look like Fantasia, okay? I'm talking, like, most of the sound effects aren't there. Most of them, it's just implied that there's a sound. And it decides when to throw a sound effect in very just erratically, and it's basically about this boy who, you know, does a transformation and pulls out a gun and solves all of his problems with a gun, sometimes on school trips or at school if that's where the aliens are. And basically what we learn from him is that when you splice together probably two different episodes into different scenes of God knows what the fuck's happening, you just pull out a gun to solve your problems. Churchman Ken, he's our guy.
It's truly astounding in terms of, like, what needs to be understood is that, like, that era of, like, anime is, like, the most formulaic, I would say, probably, era of anime, where it's just, like, there's a problem of the week, you get in there, and the hero solves that problem.
Yeah.
So I think, like, my issue going in, or my expectation more so going in, was that it was just going to be like, it's just going to be like bad, boring monster of the week stuff that doesn't really do anything. And then by like the fourth episode, there's a space botanical garden that like there's a threat at, and then suddenly halfway through the episode, for some reason, Charge Man Ken is underwater fighting
there's
the
no
aliens.
Explanation. It just is there, and you're supposed to
into it. Also, there's one episode where there's just a mummy man.
Yeah.
Not like Egyptian stereotype mummy of like person wrapped in like cloth or something like but just like a mummified
desiccated dude.
Corn.
Yeah.
And one episode is just inexplicably Westworld.
Yeah. With really, really offensive.
Culturally insensitive to
it. Yeah, it's terrible.
To the point that I saw it on screen, it was just screaming like, oh my god.
Yeah.
You can't keep talking like this, white baby. You can't do that. So,
oh, God.
I described it to everyone here that, like, the thing that makes it really work is that unpredictability, and also each episode is, like, 5 minutes long.
That's the only way it can work.
Like, you get in, you get out, and if you've hit a point at the end of the episode where you're like, okay, I've had enough Charge Man Ken for the day, you can just leave.
It's like, it's hard to hit the end of an episode and like think that there's like I've had enough Charge Man Ken, because it always is. The beginning of the credits is always with a still from the show where it looks like Charge Man Ken is threatening his robot friend with horrible violence.
Robot friend Doritos or whatever.
Barrican,
yeah.
Which,
I'm Peter Barrican.
Which he has a little freak that follows him around.
Like, the minute you see him in the first episode, you're like, oh, I already hate this little
freak.
This
little guy.
I hate him so much.
And they use the same still every time in the credits that is like Chargeman Ken looking back at him in his little ship, just being like, I will fucking beat you to death.
I'm going to kill you.
Wrap my fingers.
If you say one more goddamn word, freak.
It's fucked up.
And his little friend, the girl, is just like, is just sitting there like, I want to say something, but I'm afraid to speak up.
Like, Barrican is calling 911 and like pretending like he's ordering pizza. Like, it's not good. It's bad. It's really bad. And they demean him too throughout the episodes he's like the doofy sidekick, so it just amplifies
like,
oh, that.
Fuck you, Barrican.
Maximum disrespecting Barrican.
Yeah. It's so good.
Everyone's wearing future space pajamas and acting like, we're children, we're children,
and
we're
also,
children.
Everyone
space
looks like a weird homunculus.
Like,
yeah, like it's
Renaissance
bad.
Fair. Like, somebody just had like a jester hat or like a crown.
Everyone has fucking shoujo eyes. Like
there
everyone,
are some handsome looking gentlemen.
There's one. His father looks like handsome Tom Tucker. It's fucked up. It's
and like, So there are times where it is clear that, like, when they are producing the show, they're just, it's just like, we need a person. Someone draw a person. Draw a person right now. And it's just like, is this a person close enough? Put it under the camera.
How are we going to animate his arms? Just fucking
do it.
Move the arm thing back.
This thing is doing 20 minutes. Hurry up.
I found a way to explain kind of, like, how the plot structure flows.
Go for it.
You know that Dexter episode where they just had a kid call in and, like, give his example of what a Dexter episode would be?
No, I have no
You are stupid! And he, like, he makes a friend with his computer. Like, well, this is the thing. For anyone who remembers that, listen, it's a well-known thing. I'm not just pulling stuff out of my ass. Listen, it feels like a child was just saying, like, okay, so Charge Man Ken, he flips around and then he has his suit on and he has his gun and he has a little sidekick and then the guys come in and they fight and then he's underwater and then he's shooting them with a gun and the botanical place is saved. It, like the stream of consciousness of a fucking either an insane person or a child. Just no fucking, like, no one sat down and storyboarded this in a way that makes sense. Also, every other fucking scene has a hair in the cell, and you can't unsee it. It's so there.
It's so. You could take a shot every time you see it, and you would probably die.
No, yeah, you will go. You'll die in the hospital if you make it to the hospital.
You look like you had a thing to say, Evie.
Yeah, there's one episode with the flesh-eating butterfly.
Oh, yeah! Oh my god, there's an episode of flesh-eating butterfly. That was the part. Bridget, you need to stop tapping the table with your leg. You gotta sit back.
God, the flesh-eating butterfly.
Oh my lord!
The flesh-eating butterflies that specifically are not made by the aliens, they're just revived because apparently 50 years ago we had a plague of
flesh-eating butterflies
that specifically only eat human
cells.
What about the history books on that look like?
Yeah, seriously. Well, unfortunately, that's like the lost era of history that's only passed along through folklore because all the historians had their cells eaten by the, by the butterflies.
Truly the second library of Alexandria.
came back from the brink.
I guess on my side of things, probably the one notable thing that I've been doing that hasn't been mentioned is that I watched through all of Moral Oral
since the last time. That is the bleakest show in the universe.
We've already discussed it a lot in the household, but not on recording. But, like, watching that show immediately after Righteous Gemstones, which, like, Evie and I both agree that Righteous Gemstones, like, because the humans are, like, I guess you phrased it better. You might be able to, like,
So, like, the thing about the Righteous Gemstones, like, we thought it kind of, like, in terms of being, like, something that sent up, like, modern
evangelicalism.
Yeah. And just, like, its marriage to, like, you know, American state power and capital. Like, it sort of pulled its punches because the characters involved, like,
You can tell that the writers liked those characters.
Yeah, liked those characters, even though they're, like, they are horrible.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, Moral Oral goes so much harder in the paint in terms of, like, being a critique of those things because all of the characters are just one-dimensional cutouts of people.
Yeah, these weird little claymation abominations, and it's just it's essentially about how, like, through Protestant evangelicalism, like, America has, like, created its own, like, personal hell on earth in suburbia. Like, there are so many episodes where it ends and you're just like, Oh my, how do you live in this world? Like, it's so dark. Like, I think probably the most notable episode, it's called Alone, and it's not really about any of the main characters, it's like a snapshot of these three different women living in Oral 10. And it's essentially just about how this society that they live in has just, like, permanently damage them in ways that are, like, hard to, like, summarize.
Yeah.
Like, it's It's so fucked up. One of them, literally, their mother, like, ripped out their, like, their reproductive organs after birth. Like, immediately when she was born, was just like, nah, get that shit out of her. It's like, holy fuck.
Just...
It's brutal. And, like, there's, like, two rays of sunshine in that show that basically just say, like, no, ultimately, you have the ability to get through that kind of upbringing and trauma okay. It just, you have to, like, hard divide yourself from that.
Yeah.
It's wild. It's probably now, like, in my top three, like, William Street production. Or I guess that one, I don't think that one's William Street, but, like, Adult Swim original productions that they have ever done. Like, it's so good. It's unreal.
Not Perfect Hair Forever?
Oh, God, we don't need to talk. Fuck Perfect Hair Forever. That thing's so dumb. Give me a moment here while I pull up the listener feedback back that we've received so far. You can follow us at putonthelist.bsky.social. You can find us anywhere major podcasts are sold. Maybe at some point in the future, if you're local to Portland, you might hear us on the radio?
I'm talking to a local broadcaster here soon. So.
What? This is the first I've heard about that.
Don't worry, I'll take care of it. I can only submit us. I can't say we're going to go anywhere. I just know that they needed another queer block filled full
we
of a bunch of
this
laughing weirdos.
Not on tape. Thank you.
But you can find us anywhere major podcasts are sold. Put it on the list.neocities.org. But yeah, we get feedback from people. You can send us feedback there. Also, wifecitygaming@gmail.com. You can send us emails there. I haven't checked if we've gotten anything since. But I know we got some replies here. We got mostly replies from Owen.
Uh-huh.
Shout out to Owen.
Definitely a lot of Shakespeare-related things, so I'm going to take a brief moment and check the emails. One moment here.
Well, what's up with the Eevee Minute?
Bridget keeps jumping in with, here's the Eevee Minute, and then just doing things that don't involve me at all. the past weekend, before this weekend, where we're recording, Jay and I attended a queer board game night
at a local game store
that was super fun. It's quite a thing to just like be in a place where there's just like a bunch of just like trans people who like you don't know necessarily, but like you're all just like having fun hanging out together. That's quite cool. And also the store is quite nice. It's got like a big statue of Big Boss. Right in the entrance, which is very fun.
Big Boss from Metal Gear.
Yeah, Big Boss from Metal Gear Solid 3 Snake Eater.
Delta.
I think it's just regular Snake Eater.
Snake Eater!
I don't know if I should read this one.
That's always...
Well, you can always edit it out later if it's too spicy.
If it... You know what? Read it and see if they accept us on the...
I mean, the start, I think the subject of this and the follow-up images that are sent along with it will probably get us not on the radio.
Oh, we're not sending them this one. Go ahead.
Owen sent us an email with the subject line, saluting those who expired on 9/11, and sends images of all of his grocery items that expired on September
11th. Oh, man.
That's a good one, Owen.
That's awesome.
And then the second half of this email is the thing that definitely should not be that we're
gonna. That was the thing that you mean the first part of the email wasn't the thing that you should.
Where were you when my coleslaw went sour?
This part is especially the part that we should not put into the recording, and I will definitely edit out.
Sure.
I will not be extending the same condolences to the pasty fash who got a surprise long distance tracheotomy Bowie in Utah. Fucker should have taken Wu-Tang's warning to heart.
Hell yeah. Beautiful.
It's true. He did not protect his neck.
Oh, this is why you don't stick your neck out for certain
things. And then Owen sent a follow-up email with no subject line to it that says, "In light of recent events, I will understand if you wish to skip over reading my last email or the podcast or redacted part of it. I below have put my prediction for Bridget's choice of the next movie. Hopefully I've put enough line breaks so that you won't see it without having to scroll down, but I would ask that you keep it unread until the end of the Romeo and Juliet podcast so that it doesn't accidentally influence your choice."
Okay.
And I will say, it's one of those ones that's like, it's too obvious of a choice.
Okay.
That's what I will...
Is it Tetis? Because I know it connects.
No, that's going to come up in the posts that Owen replied with. So, first of all, Owen asks on Blue Sky, which, going on, let's stop bluesky.social. You could send us questions there if you would like. Owen says, "Have you seen any good live Shakespeare performances? I once saw an excellent Richard III that was played almost as a comedy with pratfalls and deliberate overacting right up at Bosworth Field, at which point it turned deathly serious. It was fantastic. I unfortunately have not really seen any, like, live Shakespeare." It's
not
a thing
Shakespeare.
It's something that I would like to, like, put on my, like, off the podcast list at some point, like seeing some Shakespeare.
I'll say I haven't seen good. I've seen like snippets of it, and like I used to have a friend who thought she was an actress, and she would take me to see like performances by people she knew. And I did see a couple snippets of like scenes of Shakespeare that we'll get into it as we talk about the film, but I was reminded of. But not good Shakespeare, not like full Shakespearean things. I don't have 6 hours to listen to a language I half understand, but it's, you know, it's old English. I like the new English works better for me. I'm more accustomed to it.
Evie, you haven't seen any?
I saw one, like a community college where I used to live put on a production of like one of his like lesser or like kind of lesser known plays.
Mm-hmm.
And that was fun. Like not really being familiar with it, I was able to follow along pretty well. But it was, I have not seen a whole lot of like really, really good.
Like good Shakespeare. How about you, Bridget? Have you ever seen any good Shakespeare?
No.
All right. Well, there's the answer. Next one from Owen. Shakespeare counts as crew for this, right? The next person can pick Titus, right? Is it Sass's choice next? Sass, pick Titus. Do it for me. It has Anthony Hopkins. I know you love Anthony Hopkins because everyone loves Anthony Hopkins.
We love you, Owen.
What do you have to say to that, Bridget?
I don't know. Their video game output was not very good.
Da-da-da-da-da-da.
Fox.
And then lastly, from Owen, he says, "Besides Titus, Kurosawa's Ron, based on King Lear, and Throne of Blood, Macbeth, are maybe my favorite adaptations of Shakespeare. Throne of Blood, especially for the completely deranged way that ending was shot," which I've seen snippets of that, and I need to watch more Kurosawa, but, like, that especially is one of those ones where it's like, I need to see that shit. That seems
fair
like
enough.
It whoops ass.
Sure.
But yeah, I think that is it for the listener feedback from what I can see here. So now is the time where we get into discussing the movie of the week, Baz Luhrmann's William Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, the summary is generally pretty easy because it is a modern retelling of William Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet. Like, when you take it at its face in that sense,
modern-ish.
Yeah, it's like
it's 30 years ago now.
Yeah,
it still reads as pretty modern.
Yeah. I wouldn't say it's timeless, because there's like needle drops in it that are definitely of the 90s specifically, yeah. But I feel like as a representation of a modern Shakespeare.
By comparison to 1597, it's pretty modern.
Yeah. Like,
what about the Gonzo Romeo and Juliet show?
Families with neon-colored spiked hair and cars using guns for swords is pretty more modern.
yeah. Like, literally the only thing that's missing from that movie is, like, modern cell phones.
Yeah.
Like, that is the only thing that kind of separates it, because they would have to construct some kind of inconvenience around that for the letter to not make it to Romeo at the end, because Father Lawrence could have just called him on his phone and be like, hey, Romeo!
Yeah, but I think that's the thing about it, is like saying that it's a modern retelling
sells short what it's
doing. Sells short what it's doing, which is like, it is straight up just like the dialogue. Like, it's clear that they were also like trying to translate like the stage direction in a lot of places.
Oh yeah.
Like, it is like pretty, it's a pretty faithful adaptation in terms of like, you know, taking what's on the page and putting it on the page.
Yeah, basically drilling it down to everything that you like need to understand what happens in Romeo and Juliet in that like 2 hour space.
Yeah,
because like you kind of bring up the stage direction, and like the stage direction in some ways feeds into the editing of this movie, especially early on in it, because like the first half hour of this movie like feels like it is moving at a million miles an hour.
It's like the beginning of a 3D Sonic game.
Evie made up a good, or didn't make up, but like made a good connection with like John Woo, like specifically Hard Boiled, with like the first action sequence where it's like the House of Capula and the House of Montague.
Yeah, so getting their goons end up encountering each other.
Yeah, and getting into a shootout at a gas station.
I bite my thumb at you, sir.
I do not bite my thumb at you, but I bite my thumb, sir.
It's so like you're watching these very modern, like rich kid families getting in an argument in modern day, like in the old tongue. I don't think there was a moment in this film that my, my sense of, what do you call it, a suspension of disbelief, I never had that. There was never a time where I could look at this and take it for what it was. But, like, I loved watching it. It was a fascinating thing to watch happen, but I knew that it was this experimental blending of two things that I couldn't get absorbed in it.
It's funny that you say that, because I feel the exact flip side of that. Like, I feel like that movie is such a spectacle up front that it kind of demands that you as the viewer are either in it or you get off the fucking train, effectively.
And then it shows all the future scenes and like...
Yeah, like, it's so trying to pull you in that like once it finally like slows down and just gets into the general motions of like how the tragedy unfolds from the romance, like... It's basically just doing Shakespeare at that point, which it's both like, I would say like a fault of the movie and like something that is kind of admirable about it, is that like it's campy about it, but it's campy in a way where it's like, no, it's fucking Shakespeare. We gotta fucking be big about it because it's Shakespeare, but it doesn't stick to being as big as that opening act is.
I haven't read Romeo and Juliet since middle school when we were assigned it, and I have to ask, because I forget, where was the part in that play where, like, Romeo gets fucked up on designer drugs and gets lost staring at fish?
That's one of my favorite, like, kind of twists they put on. But Evie, you look like you had a thing to say first.
I think, it is... Like, it is a thing in the original play where he, I don't know if he, gets drunk or if he does have, some kind of,
trip as he goes to the party at, like, the Capulet's place. Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter the era. There's always drugs.
I guess that's fair. There's always some kind of drug going around. But, like, I could have sworn that it's mostly just that Mercutio is just, like, really gassing him up to be like, no, yeah, let's go to this fucking thing. Like,
we are going to party. I am a queenie bitch, and we are going to have fun.
Mercutio is so good.
I love him.
It's also been a long time since I've read it, but I think that is a thing where, like, I just can't remember if the drugs are figurative or not.
I feel like it's supposed to be more figurative, yeah, because the whole speech is that it's kind of like how essentially Mercutio is equating love itself, mm-hmm, like, with a drug.
Yeah.
Like, it is the, like, literally the drug that him in the movie is holding up is, like, a, like, thing of X with, like, a Cupid's arrow heart, yeah, on, yeah, it, essentially. So, like, it is towing that line of being, like, this is love. Love is a drug. This shit's gonna kill you, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, you don't, like, want none of this shit, Romeo.
But also, the, like, figurative drug, so easily forgotten.
But also, like, it also makes sense to, like, literalize it in that way, because I don't think you can. It makes sense to do that in order to
get them to that part.
Yeah, and also to like, kind of express what the play is expressing in that moment, where, uh-huh, it's just like, love is like a drug that will make you do stupid shit.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Trying to remember how we got to that part, but, like, no, yeah, it's pretty, I feel like it's pretty faithful from what I remember, which, like, I think that in and of itself is a strength of the movie, is, like, even if it isn't being by the beat, like, in every single inch of it faithful to Romeo and Juliet, everyone knows enough of that play that, like, you watch it and you're like, yeah, that's how it goes.
Yeah, that's the,
like,
scene, yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing.
And I do, it does, especially in that opening segment, it does feel like there are some, like, there are some, like, moves in how the movie is made, where it is, like, there's a tension between how Baz Luhrmann wants to do a version of Romeo and Juliet and how Baz Luhrmann is trying to make a faithful adaptation of any Shakespearean play palatable to a modern audience. And, like, there's that segment where it is, like, just the newscaster giving the intro to the play.
Yeah, essentially playing the role of the Greek
chorus.
Yeah.
And then immediately there's, like, it's like the trailer for the movie that you're watching plays directly after that with the same dialogue. And it's like, I feel like that repetition wouldn't happen unless, like, someone while making the movie determined, we need to really drill home who these people are,
yeah,
and, like, who the cast of characters are,
mm-hmm,
the dramatis personae, because otherwise people are going to be lost as soon as we get in there, and then, like, we're going to lose them with the antiquated way of speaking.
That's it was to the point, like, this was my first time watching it. I was wondering if, like, I had attained a copy of the movie that was, like, some weird, like, director's cut or something like that, like, something that was not the proper version of the movie. Bridget, is that just how the movie normally is?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, for sure. Because, yeah, it was very weird to have those both back-to-back, but the way you say it, it does make sense. Like, especially as someone who hadn't seen... or read Romeo and Juliet in a while, it does help to kind of have all of those characters laid out and be like, this is the cast that you are working with here.
It's like, oh, right, there's all this stuff with, like, Paris and, like,
played by Paul Rudd.
Paul Rudd.
Paul Rudd. It's so distracting. It's the most it is more distracting than seeing, like, normal modern people saying Shakespearean dialogue. It is seeing Paul Rudd's doofy-ass face on screen saying Shakespearean dialogue.
Paul Rudd, who is basically always smiling, getting cucked. See, like, he doesn't technically do anything wrong other than exist and be Paul Rudd.
Yeah, and he not just be plays the buffoon, more or less, for this movie. Yeah.
But he has the Michael Cera effect of, like, I can't separate Michael Cera from being Michael Cera in every Michael Cera role that he's Michael Cera.
Which is a shame, because Paul Rudd is good. Yeah, like, he is a good actor. It's just that he's become such a, like, pop culture, like, figure that you cannot separate that from him.
Now, Juliet, I can get into.
It doesn't help that, like, for instance, if you were to watch, like, his Conan bits and how Paul Rudd just effectively just looks the same these decades in...
He has a very, like, youthful face no matter what age you're looking at him at. It's a very Keanu Reeves, like...
Like, there was that whole thing where he did a commercial for the Switch 2.
Oh, right!
Where, like, they played up how much older he looks.
Yeah.
And that's, like, the first time I ever was just like, oh, he's, like...
He's, like, in his 50s,
yeah,
isn't he?
He's an older guy now.
So, like, that's... Because the fact of the matter is, like, if you pulled, like, your cultural idea of who Paul Rudd is away from this movie, he's playing it, like, as straight as humanly possible for his role.
Yeah.
Like, he does not feel out of place there.
Yeah.
Which is, like, essentially how all of the actors feel in this movie, which is what makes it such a fascinating thing to watch is...
Yeah, see, like, there were definitely moments, like, even, like, separate from, like, the content of the movie itself and, like, you know, being in it. Just, like, seeing these different actors, you know, like John Leguizamo and Paul Rudd and Brian Dennehy, like, do it Shakespeare. It's just like, oh, this thing fucking rules. This is great.
Yeah. Like, regardless of we talked about this a lot in this, like, recent watch that we were doing of it. Like, there's something to be said of, like, if you were to show, like, a seasoned Shakespearean actors some of the performances in there, one could imagine them looking at that and being like, this is a fucking abomination.
Yeah, it sucks.
But, like, there's something to be said of, like, how well this movie is cast, how well each actor, like, really plays things up in their own individual ways that, like, really breathes life into every single scene that you watch. Like, especially the subject of, like, what me and Evie were talking a lot about during the watch was, like, specifically Claire Danes and Leo as Romeo and Juliet in this movie, where, like, neither of them are super great in terms of their acting. I would say Leo is, like, a little bit better than Claire Danes, but, like, there's such an electric chemistry between the two of them. And
the crying scene.
It's bad. That crying is bad.
Well, I don't say that crying is bad, but I think generally speaking, like, Claire Danes, like, she's doing a good job.
She's,
like,
trying.
And, yeah, and a lot of, like, physical, like, in terms of, like, selling a lot of, like, I think a thing about this movie is that the performances are doing a lot of heavy lifting to make up for the fact that, like, the dialogue is in 1597 English.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's a lot of physical acting to make up for, like, the ways that you just don't... You as we are modern human beings, like, we don't understand how you emphasize the way that Shakespeare, like, originally intended dialogue. Like, and that's what makes, like, so many of the scenes, like, fun, is seeing the choices that each individual actor is making in their physicality on stage.
Yeah.
Like, when you have, like, that first back and forth between, like, Romeo and Benvolio, like, where they're talking about, like, So what's the deal with Romeo up front? It's like specifically
Romeo up front, he's like lovesick about the other Capulet girl who we never see in the movie.
Rosaline. Yeah. Like, yeah. We never see her. Like, he is lovesick about her, and there's just this really good back and forth between the two of them where, like, your understanding of it as a modern audience is entirely based on, like, how they are, like, gesturing towards one another.
Yeah, and, like, their inflection, like, how they're, like, how, like, the tone of the conversation, kind of.
Yeah.
Like, would any woman be good for Romeo, considering his emotional state?
What do you mean?
Like, would he just take anybody who looks like...
I don't think that's supposed... Like, the whole point of it is just, like, it was this beautiful flash of a moment. Like, yeah. that's the thing with the star-crossed lovers thing, is, like, it... The thing that, like, makes it click is just, like, you see someone and you feel an immediate spark with them. Like, a thing that cannot be, like, defined in any conversation or, like, just normal, like, physicality or something like that. It's just there.
Yeah, and it's like, if we checked in on them, like, 30 years later and they hadn't died, like, maybe that wouldn't have turned out so great, but also that's not the point.
Yeah, that's exactly the thing. Tis better to have loved than have lost, you know?
Tis better to instantly marry than to never marry.
But soft, what soldier boy through thine window cranks?
But yeah, like, that, the way that, the way that the gas station such thing beginning shakes out is like, you know, Benvolio coming out of the bathroom and trying to, you know, squash the beef between the two factions, and then Tybalt comes out and he has this monologue about how it's just like, peace. I hate the word.
Yes. I'm the biggest hater.
I'm a fucking asshole. And then he starts the fight.
And, like,
It's just like the opening of Zoolander. They die in a freak gasoline fight.
I don't think anyone actually died.
No, there's the one guy in the back of the Monty Hughes car.
Yeah, but he shows back up later.
Oh, does he?
Yeah, he's the guy who's, like, he's dressed as a Viking with, like, a skirt. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even realize.
He doesn't get shot. He doesn't die or anything.
Good medical care in modern old England.
So, now I remember. So, we had started from there because of the connection. Like, watching it the second time, Evie, you had connected it to Hard Boiled, specifically by John Woo. And, like, yeah, like, the action direction in that scene is, like, so fucking manic and all over the place that it just, it harkens.
Yeah, it is like... Also, like, Tybalt is shoot dodging and, like...
Spinning guns
flagrantly. Everywhere. And, like, he's on his knees and, like, changing out attachments on his guns.
Ripping his jacket off. Like,
I think that's another reason I get, like, the grind fiction vibe from this. Is, like, it feels so Sonic. It feels so, like, when you see a gun that says sword, you think of, like, the truck that says gun.
Gun? Bridget, you were laughing to yourself about something over there. What were you thinking about?
I was just thinking how fucked up it is that somehow the gasoline fight in Zoolander is more deadly than the opening fight to Romeo and Juliet.
Also, I feel like there isn't a better time to bring this up than now, but, like, when we talk about just, like, the juxtaposition between, like, you know, the modern day stuff with the old script, it's the reason that I found it hard, I think, to get lost in it is the same reason that, like, when I see people acting in modern day, even if they're, like, moderately good actors, and, like, everyone in this film is amazing, it's just the play set, but when I watch people try to act out things from that long ago, you can't unsee the fact that modern day fuckos are doing this, like, old script, and it's, like, it's so distant, and I think that's why, like, it takes a truly great actor to act like live Shakespearean plays, because you need to take people to a place that, like, they are so alien to. Like, you need to make it believable and not look like a guy who's an orthodontist on Sundays but is also saying these lines that were written by someone who is not of this era.
Well, going back to the point I was making earlier, I think that's why the physicality of the performances in this movie, like,
it's well directed.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, it's so well directed in terms of, like, getting, like, motion out of the characters, that, like, that is the thing that, like, kind of pulls me in. It's like, you are pulled in by the energy of both the direction and the editing and the acting, to the point that, like, you can, at the very least for me, I can forget about how fucking ridiculous this is, that Captain Prince is saying, banished!
Banished! So both are punished!
Like, it's ludicrous, but it works! It fucking works! Like, some people are just bringing, like, real powerhouse performances. Yeah. Like, the lady that plays Juliet's, like, handmaiden is so...
She's bobbing, like, back and forth.
She brings
it.
Such, like, a modern character energy to this role that is, like,
I love her. She might be my favorite character.
She's up there, I feel, because it's not...
Well, there's Mercutio, I guess.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Mercutio is another, like, phenomenal example. Yeah, take some dude that was basically just, like, Romeo's friend
and he is like he becomes the queer representation of the movie. Yeah. Like, he's and that actor's name is Harold Perrineau, I believe, and like he just fucking he steals the show. He is totally just like the highlight of the movie.
The scene,
it's sad when he dies like earlier than everyone else, because it's like, man, this was about him.
But also the scene where he goes out is like one of the highlights of the movie, because he really like nails like bringing that dialogue into a modern space, like really pulling you into that scene.
But that was a good scene.
I think that like one of the moments where you feel like, oh, this is like a true, this is where it like really kind of like, this is like a modern element in the play, is when Tybalt shows up and is like trying to call out Romeo and like gets Mercutio. And Mercutio is just kind of blowing him off and just like fucking with him. And then Tybalt is just like, oh, have you consorted with Romeo? And like Tybalt takes that. That is when Mercutio stops fucking around. And he like, that is when like Tybalt hits a nerve, is like the implication that there's something between Romeo and Mercutio. And it's just like where Mercutio is like, are you accusing me of fucking that kid? Like, it's just, and that's when it starts to get like more serious.
Yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't considered like the movie itself is like very homoerotic. It's got that strong energy to it, but I hadn't even considered that read of that, the dynamic of those two. But like, it's just the way he played, because like that scene starts with him on the beach like practicing his gunplay, right?
Yes,
like that whole scene plays out so fucking good. Like, basically anytime they're at the beach is some of my favorite stuff in the movie, because you get all that stuff with Mercutio. You got that good scene where it's the nurse is coming to pick up Romeo, and like Mercutio is like, you could tell that he is feeling away, like he's calling out to Romeo and Romeo keeps going, and he's like pulls out the gun and just fires around, just like, fucking listen to me, dude.
Hey, are we gonna see you at your father's house later?
Yeah, like, you are my friend, like, I'm trying, like, he really is the heart of that, of the movie, and like pulling you in there and getting you invested, so that once he is the one that like finally eats it, you feel that, like, the confrontation between Romeo and Tybalt after Mercutio has died, like, where Tybalt is basically holding the gun to Romeo's head and Romeo's just like, yeah, do it, either me or you or both of us have to die. Like, and he just keeps screaming it, and it like it sells that fucking scene.
That was, like, one of the most powerful moments in the movie.
Like, and it's so campy, and it's, like, you could argue that it's not really well acted in a traditional sense, but you feel it. Like, it is an argument for, like, just purely emotional, like, heartstrings pulling, yeah. in a way.
Who hasn't, like, been in one of these rages in their life where they're like, I could see it, like...
But I think that is one of the things about, like, making a movie like this where it is this play from 400 years ago is transposed into, like, a modern day setting where, like, it is an exercise to see, like, how is this work still relevant in the time in which we're making this movie. And, like, I think it does a really good job in making it and, like, kind of showing the way that it still has relevancy. Like, like you were saying, like, this is a work that's in conversation with not just, like, hard-boiled and all, and all, like, all
John
artistic
Woo
stuff,
in general, yeah.
But also just, like, it is very, like, it's clearly invoking, like, the LA riots.
Yes. Yeah. And really, like, sensationalist, like, news media, because that was the thing that we, like, almost got into in conversation while we were watching it. We were like, no, we gotta save this for the podcast, because, like, it's a movie that I would almost argue that this movie is fucking brilliant if it weren't for the fact that I don't know that the choices it made were, like, intentionally, like, trying to be smart. Well, the choice of making the Greek chorus, like, news anchors just really plays well into, like, sensationalist media around, like, tragedies.
Yeah.
Like, literally, that is what we are seeing there. Like, every day, like... like the 24-hour news cycle is, like, just making a story to put onto, like, beam into your fucking house and then pass along the very next day.
I hadn't even considered that.
That is someone's own personal tragedy.
Yes.
Yeah. And I wonder if that was intentional to be that, like, layered.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's sort of thing where it's like, I don't think it. Like, whether or not it's intentional is kind of beside the point.
No, sure. It works as an art to express that, whether it was the intention or not.
Yeah. And I think it is both clever in a way that it enhances the relevancy of the work itself, but it is also, if you're looking at it from just, like, a sicko, like, appreciator of, like, Shakespearean work, like it's a really clever way to do the Greek chorus.
Sure.
In a way that's not, like...
Isn't someone, like, just, like, some random person off the street comes up and looks at the camera and is like, here is the saddest tale of Juliet and Romeo.
Like, well, yeah, there are various movies have done things, obviously. There's, like, Little Shop of Horrors where the chorus is literally dancing in the street, part of the...
Yeah.
Sure. But, like, I think what we were trying to say is that, like, the usage of, like, the news anchor, like, as...
Diegetic.
That is another thing that, like, truly pulls you, like, into the story. Like, it's not simply that it's, like, a news anchor, but the way it is framed in the film itself is you are, like, in a dark room watching this on a television.
Yeah, it's like this is on a television in the void. Like, kind of bringing you into it.
Yeah, like, that... The way that it is framed in that sense, like, it is not new, like, phone news anchor full screen. It is, like, you are literally watching this on a TV unfold. Like, that... As if you were literally a... You yourself were a person in that world of Romeo and Juliet. Like, there is a layer of... obfuscation in the, like, fiction there that that in and of itself is another thing to pull you into the world of it.
Now, the things that, like, the things where it is, like, bringing elements that were in the play to the modern day that are, like, a little funnier are, like, all the various sacristans that they come in contact with, where it's just, like, here's a coat room for your guns. Like, they go to the pool hall, and yeah, there's just a guy there who is just, like, if you don't have a ticket, I'm not giving you your gun back.
Yes. There's that. The funniest one that got us all is just, like, the letter that Father Lawrence delivers, yes, to Romeo, where, like, it's literally, it is, the name of the delivery service is post-haste delivery, which that is funny in and of itself, but it's, yeah, literally, like, a UPS driver, like, drops a letter off at your door, and, like, Romeo doesn't hear it because he's behind his trailer hitting rocks with a stick.
I like to hit rocks with a stick.
It's so funny. Which, like, that in and of itself is another layer of this movie that I deeply appreciate. It's, like, I think it gets how funny and, like, catty Shakespeare is always trying to be. Yeah. Like, Shakespeare is a little bit of a cunty bitch.
Yeah. there's a lot of fun wordplay still in the various bits of dialogue.
Yeah, like the scene with Mercutio eating, yeah, it. Like, it has, like, you see me tomorrow, I will be a great man.
Yeah.
They'll make worm's meat of me. It's, yeah, like, it's all, it's beautiful. It works perfectly.
They couldn't have slid the letter under his door, or even just, like,
yeah,
left it for him to get.
Stick it to the door where the wind will definitely just blow it off.
Yeah. So real.
Well, it's also that just they left a note about it. They didn't even live the fucking, like, it sucks.
Yeah,
it's like actually trying to receive a fucking package.
You want to know who sucks? Balthazar.
Balthazar, yeah, sucks. Goddamn.
The perennial fuck-up Balthazar, who shows up to Juliet's funeral, sees it happening, and, like, can see the father, like, very much looking at him, like he's gonna, like,
he's
reach out to say something to him.
He's trying to communicate with him, and he's just like, no!
I gotta go
tell my man! Shout out to Pete Postlethwaite, who plays the father, he does such a good job for a role that is so functionary,
mm-hmm,
where it's just,
yes,
like, this is a man who exists because the plot has to happen.
Yeah.
Like,
he's memorable in it.
Yeah, he's very good.
I think everyone in this movie is good in some respect.
Before you go to, after coming from the Lost World,
Jurassic Park?
Yeah, but, like,
yeah, the Lost World, yeah.
Yeah, he's the main
hunter.
Oh!
Not in the original, but Lost World.
No, I don't know that I've ever seen Lost World.
I think I've seen that movie, like, once, and it was when I was very small.
I've seen it a billion.
Next on the list.
No, but, like, but I say he's, like, functionary. Like,
she could do that to us.
She could.
He is, like, he's the one who has to, like, of all the shots in the movie, he has to be the one who, like, looks into the camera and, like, says a bunch of shit about how in 24 hours the poison is going to stop working and you're going to wake up.
Yeah.
So we need to be sure that Romeo is there when we do that. Like, it's...
Yeah, for some reason the father is researching a flower that can, like, put you to,
yeah,
sleep.
Yeah, you know, that's what friars were into back then.
Yeah, I was going to say, who doesn't
apothecary,
have a hobby?
Apothecary,
yeah,
herbalism,
yeah,
all that kind of shit.
Everything that I know about that I care about as a passion, I know some weird fucked up thing about it. Just because as you dig for info on your passions, you find this shit. And it's a fascinating thing to look into, especially since, despite being, you know, apparently in the 90s, it very much has a archaic idea of death, that you could be perceived that way when your pulse is still going. So
yeah,
it's, you know, it's very much still in that world.
That's part of, like, the comedy and tragedy in when Romeo finally, like, reunites with Juliet at the end. It's like, he's specifically talking about, like, man, I don't get how you're dead when you still looks like you're so full of life. Meanwhile, she's, like, still, her eyes are, like, starting to open. He's like,
her eyes are open as he's taking
like,
the
no, I'm too teary-eyed and grief-stricken. I can't see shit.
He's like, oh, man, I mean, you're still beautiful, and that's nice, but I guess I gotta fucking kill myself.
Wait, don't do it! Oh, fuck.
Like, that's the thing! Literally, he takes the sip and she's like, Romy!
I wasn't sure if it got in his mouth. It was so quick.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, it is... The specific rendition, Romeo and Juliet, like, really drives home, like, the fact that they are just, like... two like
stupid teenagers,
stupid kids who act rashly because like they don't see a way out of the situation that they're in.
I too felt heartbreak at 16.
Yeah, but like the chemistry between those two really works. Like,
yeah,
I have to imagine that the audition process for that movie was like whichever two actors they were considering. They're like, you have to do the scene. You know,
yeah.
Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo? Because, like, that is the move, the scene that if that doesn't pop, nothing about the movie works from that point forward.
Yeah, that's the scene you gotta nail.
And I think that scene really, really works.
Yeah.
Like, it's shocking. I was kind of shocked how well it pulled me in. Like, as someone who I think can get a little bit jaded in regards to especially, like, classical, like, really that classical of works, and especially something that is, like, a cishet, like, romance
in
that sense. Like, you gotta pull a lot of legwork to pull me into something like that.
Sure.
But I think it does a great job.
People love seeing two gorgeous people fall in love. You know,
and die.
Yes, and die. Yes.
And die. Because, you know, you see this majesty and you're like, maybe one day I could die.
Shakespeare's like, I mean, it's going to happen to all of us, buddy. Oh, yeah, another thing that I noted in this second watch was specifically, like, the, like, breakneck pacing of the editing. I realized why it was paced like that, because specifically the way that it'll happen is, like, two characters will have a dialogue and then suddenly like everything is moving in fast motion and then it'll slow back down and characters will talk again. It's because they're trying to get through the stage direction in those scenes so they can like, okay, we gotta get through all the plot beats here in 2 hours.
And with all that chaos, it made me realize like if this was paced normally in like the current setting and like design of this movie, it would have looked like a Tim Burton-esque nightmare of just like droning on with like, yeah, all the pageantry. Just get to the fucking point. It's good that it's kind of sped up.
Don't you say that. We're going to finish this podcast and it's going to be announced like Tim Burton's doing a...
Oh, God.
Oh, please. No.
He's in his harping on nostalgia phase because he's doing Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. Hmm. Although I guess some people like that movie.
People do like that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Juliet's actress, though, makes me really glad I have cheekbones. I'm like, okay, I see what people see in it. Like, good look.
What, because she also has cheekbones?
Yeah.
Okay.
She got them cheekbones.
Beautiful bones!
My cheeks!
I don't know how much more... This is officially going to be the shortest episode of podcast we've ever done, because I don't think I have much else more to say about this movie.
Jamie Kennedy jump scare in this movie.
Oh my god. I mean, you all talk about a bad path that Bridget could take us down. She could take us to Son of the Mask if she wanted to.
Malibu's Most Wanted.
I think I would maybe
get a kick out of Malibu's Most Wanted. Kind of funny. It wouldn't be good, but like it would be preferable to Son of the Mask.
I mean, like, what?
Like, we found out that I can't watch Son of the Mask when we tried to do it recreationally. By the time he started transforming, I was like, fuck it, I'm out. And y'all told me afterward, like, you left at a great time.
I don't think it was that. You left when the sperm seed. I think you tapped out, like, super
early. When the CG sperm showed up.
Yeah.
I think him ripping off women's dresses and, like, being fucking, just being an asshole. I was like,
okay, hold on. This isn't a podcast about Son of the Mask.
No, we don't have to talk about Son of the Mask. But I think the only other thing I have to mention is just, like, I found, because, you know, you've got this modern sense with all of this old script, I was also kind of filling in some words, some out loud, some to myself, so I wasn't interrupting the film too much. But, like, moments where you have, like, that sort of them talking together and, like, seeing each other in that best-known moment of the play, where, like, you know, while he's talking about how much he loves her, it's like he starts, like, shouting almost to the villa of just, like, you know, nothing will keep me from you. And he starts shouting out, and all I could think was, Romeo, thou art not a gangster! Cool thy shit! You know, little things like that popped into my head.
Oh, but the one part. Sorry,
it is really good. It's a good scene.
I was gonna go off on a different thing because the moment where, like, Brian Denny is like, "Fetch me my long sword," starts reaching for a shotgun.
Yeah.
For a shotgun.
It's so good.
Give me my shooting stick.
But God, yeah, the ending of that scene of just the two of them constantly being like, good night, good night, good night, good night. Like, I could see, like, a more jaded version of myself being like, shut these fucking kids up. But
yeah.
It's just, like, it's so earnest
yeah.
in it that you're like, yeah, aw, this is adorable.
Like, now, Keith.
You know, yeah. at the cool church with all the glowing neon crosses.
Oh, yeah.
The set design in this movie is great.
It really
is. It's
so
great. Wild. One of my favorite... One of the reasons why I love the beach scene so much is because of the specific part of it where it's, like, you could tell that there used to be, like, an amphitheater or something like that on the beach, but it's got, like, the backstage of it just completely blown out, so you see, like, the ocean in the background. Like, it's such a, like, kind of perfect, like, representation of what this movie in and of itself is doing in the set design. And, like, that's the type of shit that I'm talking about when I say, like, I feel like this movie, like, verges on brilliance.
Yeah.
Like, it is not, like, the best movie I've ever seen, but there's, like, these flashes where it's like, God, this movie's fucking good.
Yeah.
This is a
awesome.
Good fucking movie. Oh, I remembered a thing I wanted to ask. So, everyone here had never seen it except for Bridget, right?
Yeah.
Bridget, does this mean that, like, you were more there for when this movie was, like, a cultural moment
mm-hmm.
in time? Do you want to talk about that at all and, like, what that felt like? Because you said on the last episode that, like, this movie is, like, a mainstay in your household.
Yeah, so my sister and my cousins would always watch this, and they were deeply into Leonardo DiCaprio.
Okay, so it was specifically the Leo buzz around it. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not... it makes sense that, like, all of a sudden all the girlies weren't into, you know, just Shakespeare in general.
Yeah. Like, we gotta pull in the youngins.
This was after Titanic, or was this before
this
Titanic?
This is slightly before Titanic.
Slightly
yeah.
before. So, like, it catches the wave right before it hits its full crest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is, like, probably the reason why.
What is that movie? The one where he plays him and his twin brother?
I don't know which one that is.
I don't know.
Is that, like, a What's Eating Gilbert Grape or something?
No. Go on, I'll figure it out.
I mean, I didn't have much else.
The Quick of the Dead's before this, and
so. Yeah. But yeah, like, it just perfectly hits right at that point where, like, this movie comes out, and it's successful, but then Titanic hits, and that, like, that in and of itself, I think kind of, like, helps increase the half-life of this movie so that it has more of a cultural impact than it would have.
This movie was huge, so...
No, yeah, it was big, but, like, you would... I feel like this movie falls by the wayside if, like, Leonardo's, like, career does not skyrocket.
If it was, like, some actor other than Leonardo.
Yeah.
It could have, like, not had the same level of, like, reverence.
Yeah, but because that guy became who he was in Hollywood, like, it helps make this movie, like, stick around. Despite this movie is fucking weird. This is a weird fucking movie.
It is a weird movie.
The, The budget for this movie was $14.5 million. It made $147.6 million.
Yeah. It also helps that like it had one of the soundtracks of the '90s.
Also, it's Man in the Iron Mask.
Man in the Iron Mask,
where it has two of them together, and they still didn't quite have the technology to display both of them together.
You know, you gotta do what you can in the moment for that stuff. But yeah, like this album has like the one Cardigan song on it that everyone knows. It's got Love Fool. It's got multiple Radiohead songs on it for some reason.
It's got a children's choir singing When Doves Cry.
Yes.
Oh man, I forgot about that.
That's such a wild choice for like a poll.
Yeah, because
orchestration.
Like, yeah, because they're seeing it in the moment where the father is, or like, you know, where the priest is thinking about, oh, if I can help these kids do this, then it will like settle the beef between their families.
Yeah.
And it's just like
kind of, through the music laying out how like this is such a bad idea. This is not gonna work. Why do we scream at each other? This is what it sounds like when doves cry. Okay. I think with that, I don't have anything else I could think of about this movie.
I want to... We touched on it earlier. John Leguizamo is so fucking good in this movie, where he's, like, playing Tybalt as just, like, a weird gunslinger.
Like, he would fit in perfectly in The Quick and the Dead.
Yeah, absolutely. it's just, like... it's funny to consider just, like, if he wasn't already in the first John Wick movie, they would bring him back playing his version of Tybalt somehow.
Oh, that would be so good! Why did you say that? I want that now.
Yeah, I know.
I can't get that.
Hollywood, get on it.
Sorry, that was probably loud for you.
I've had, just for anyone listening, my right ear has been ringing, like, constantly due to a little bit of blockage from mucus, so... I'm really disoriented, but I'm pulling it out.
Let's see. We've talked about how great Mercutio is.
Yes.
The parents of the kids are they're functional. They're fine.
Yeah.
It's fun to see Brian Dennehy talk about reaching for his longsword.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the kid who just gets held up at gunpoint and he goes bang.
Oh yeah,
Leguizamo threatens to shoot a child.
It's maybe like the one ad-libbed line in the movie where John Leguizamo like pantomime shoots a child.
You can't solve all your problems with guns. What are you, Charge Man Ken? It's a shame.
I guess kind of on that point of like the parents being functional, like the best, so many of the actors in this film are just chewing the scenery and it works perfect. That's why I thought of chewing the scenery is because John Leguizamo, every time he is talking with his teeth.
Yeah.
Like he's not talking like with his tongue or his chest. I hate peace. I hate
the word.
It's so good.
Ah, yes, excellent, excellent.
Yeah, and that's partially because he's also smoking a cigarette every time he's on screen.
All right, I guess unless there's any other small like hits in there, like
I'm up for final thoughts if y'all are.
There's like a weird like miniature church or something where it's like there's like the Cristo Redentor on top of it somehow.
Yeah, kind of going back to like the set design, it's weird. Like the movie is trying to be
like an amalgamation of place. It's kind of like Bay Pig in the City, where it's like
kind of.
It's both Venice Beach and also Rio de Janeiro.
But also like very like Miami, I would say, like coded
while like functionally being Italy.
Yeah, with how Catholic the entire movie is.
Yeah.
And also like that's where the play is based in Florence, I think it is.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess as the person who picked the movie, my final thoughts, I'm very glad I finally got to see this movie. It's something that had always been like a piece of media that I was like aware of on the cultural periphery, but never really took part in. So I never knew what all the hubbub was around it. So to finally see it and not just see it and experience it, but like get how there was a hubbub around it. Like, you watch that movie and you understand how that was like a fucking moment in the 90s for people. Like,
I feel that.
That was a good experience for me. Brie, final thoughts?
I mean, gosh, like, I had never heard of this film, and, like, as y'all recall on the last episode, when you told us what it was, I was like, what? I can't wait to see this. And it really is that, like, even, I want to stress, even though I could not suspend disbelief, and I couldn't, like, fully get into it, like, for the full run of it, it is still brilliant. For what it is, the actors, like, really fucking bring it home. They're all really brilliant, and they all really just do an amazing job with what you can with this. Like, it's more a fascinating, it's less of a story to get absorbed in, and more of, like, just a fascination with how you made this, how you went in a lab, and you mixed these things together, and watching the end result of it. It's just really, really fascinating to watch. And I can definitely see watching it again in the future. It's something that I'm going to sit with for a bit, like, as a film. It's just very weird, and I love how weird it is.
For sure. Evie, final thoughts?
This movie was really great. It's a ton of fun to watch. Mm-hmm. It makes me want to watch some more Shakespeare, honestly, like, more in this, like, sort of transposed to like a modern like a setting or aesthetic sort of thing. I think
it's not Shakespeare. Well, there's this show called Gong Kutsuo, which is an adaptation of
The Count of Monte Cristo.
But like, is that like a straight adaptation of The Count of Monte Cristo? No. Okay. So that's
is it a gay adaptation?
That's the thing. She's looking for a straight adaptation of Shakespearean like plays.
Yeah, I like a part of it. Part of the thing that I enjoy about this movie is like it does sort of like it. I feel like it does a lot of as we said before, it uses the acting to do a lot of heavy lifting and like kind of making up for how hard older English is to parse.
Yeah,
compared to nowadays. But like, I do think that it does still like. It still sort of treasures, like...
The poetry of it.
Yeah, the poetry of it.
Yeah, the romance of the sound of it.
Yeah.
Well, but also the literal poetry of it, because that was the thing that I don't think I really took... I don't really think I had appreciated about Shakespeare before watching this movie, but, like, you hear these actors say these lines, and at the very least they are enunciating things well enough in the old English that you're really having that the literal prose that Shakespeare was writing there, like singing through in it.
Yeah. And so like, yeah, and that's more what I wanna investigate. But overall, yeah, this was a treat to watch. It was delightful.
Bridget. Final thoughts.
This is a movie I have seen many times in youth, so it's nice to revisit it. I still enjoy it. It's a breezy film to get through.
Mm-hmm.
Has lots of nice, memorable moments. And remember to check your mail.
Oh, that's what I have pulled. Oh,
no, I meant the move.
Speaking of remembering to check my mail, I have the email from Owen pulled up here.
Oh, that's right.
Owen says, "I think the next movie will be The Pest, starring John Leguizamo." And like I said, I think that's too easy for Bridget. I don't think she would do that.
Nope.
So, Bridget, you're the next up.
So, I still want it to be kind.
That's a good start to your movie choice.
That's such a funny way of putting it.
Well, this movie does connect to The Son of the Mass. It does connect to
the past.
Sound of Thunder.
There's a lot of bad movies
that
this connects
to. Yeah, it connects to a lot of terrible movies. Instead, I'm going to pick a movie that only has 7 voices in it.
Is the one that you told us about before?
Is it 7?
No.
Yeah, it's definitely the Magnificent 7.
No, I meant the Sackboy thing that had to be changed because it was just Little Big Planet, the movie.
Well, first you have to tell us what your connection is before you tell us what the movie is.
Okay, so, baby.
Puppy. We see Bisky sleeping under the...
She's
dreaming about something.
She's our mascot.
You can get your phone out if you need to remember what the connection is.
Oh, no, I know what it is. So I'm going to connect to the next movie through Juliet.
Oh. Okay. What about Juliet?
Her Japanese voice actress.
Which Japanese dub? Because apparently this movie has 3 from what you told me.
The original one. Okay. There are, the theatrical one. There are like 2 others that were aired on TV. But this is like, if you were to get the Japanese Blu-ray, this would... she is voiced by Maya Sakamoto.
Oh, shit. Oh. Okay.
So many
places to go from Maya Sakamoto.
Yeah, surprisingly less if you're just strictly on movies.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you could do a few Lupins, but instead we're going to do something experimental and do a movie we're going to connect it to somebody called Kiss Shot Areola Underblade.
Wait, I'm sorry, what's the title of this movie?
Gesundheit.
The title of this movie is Kizumonogatari Koyumi Vamp, which is a compilation of 3 movies into 1.
Wait, how long is this, Bridget?
It is like 2 hours and 20 minutes.
You scared me for a second there when you said compilation of 3 movies. I was like, how
well, each movie is only like an hour long, so it's not
okay.
Like...
That makes it a little bit better. But say the name of that character again for Evie.
Kiss Shot Areola Heart Underblade.
Oh, that's the name of the character.
Yes. That's the name of the character that connects.
Evie already looks exhausted.
I want a moratorium on compilation movies after this cycle.
Why?
This is a conversation for the next episode.
Yeah. Wait, what's the other compilation movie we've watched?
Reconquista and Genie.
Oh, why?
I'm gonna be straight. None of you would have enjoyed it more if it wasn't a compilation.
What does that tell us for this compilation movie?
Oh, but this one I actually like more than the separate movies itself, so this is the actual difference in...
All right,
that.
Well...
I also don't like the TV show it's based on, so...
Okay.
Great. Congratulations, Bridget. You've doomed yourself to having to explain Bakemonogatari to the rest of the podcast next time around, so...
Do I have to?
Yeah.
Yes, this movie only exists because Bakemonogatari is successful as a franchise. So, congratulations.
I'm going to take an edible before the next episode.
I don't know if you're going to want to do that with this film, but sure.
No, she meant the next episode when we record.
Yes. Oh, yeah, sure.
So next time, Kizumonogatari...
Koyumi Vamp.
Koyumi Vamp.
Released last year.
So it's a modern movie.
This is brand new. You know, we've had such a good track record with...
What are the other compilations? What other compilation movies have we done?
Gundam Reconquista and G.
Yeah, but that's Gundam Reconquista.
You can't discount it because of that.
Yeah, that's more of a damnation of Gundam than it
is. I wonder how much of this flower pod poison it would take to kill me.
Look, this is me picking a...
Don't say this, because you said this about the Umamusume movie. You gotta be careful with your promises.
This has more artistic intent than the Umu Musume movie. I don't know if this movie's good. However, there are artistry things in it I appreciate.
Oh, that sounds exactly like your argument for Umu Musume, but in the meantime, Bridget, where can people find you on the internet?
What, did you want me to pick a sound of thunder?
I don't know what I want.
It seems like we only have two options with Bridget. We have...
Well, it's because I don't have any other prepared, but anyways... And also, it's Halloween. What better thing for vampires?
You know, that's actually.
You know, I know how much you like vampire movies.
Oh yeah, the EV vampire journey continues still.
It never ends, apparently.
Bridget, where the fuck can people find you on the internet?
Well, right now, nowhere. But I guess occasionally on Blue Sky.
Once you're back in Florida in November. People can find you.
Yes. However, if anybody wants to... This movie's on Crunchyroll. Also, do not watch the TV show. That's bad. Anything else related to this thing is bad.
Turn it off.
Great feelings for what this film is going
to
be.
We have to wind down. Bridget, where can people find you on the fucking internet? No.
Oh,
no.
Right.
Stop. Where can people find you?
On Blue Sky, and then Twitch. Well, I'm not streaming right now, but Twitch TV.
Twitch.tv/Squatulas.
Thank you, Evie. Bree, where can people find you on the internet?
Hey, everyone. You can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/EasyBreezyTV. I'm a robot cat girl there, and I play video games and swear and say actionable things. You can also find my art over on vgen.co/asnesbo. You can hire me. I'll draw porn for you. I draw dirty stuff. I draw legitimate stuff. I draw
What's
some
legitimate?
Really fancy outfits.
You draw all sorts of art.
I draw all
you
sorts
draw
of
art.
Yeah. Some art is very filthy, and I don't mind drawing it. So, I do everything. That's kind of why I didn't get into the details of the comic I'm working on. It's quite filthy, and I love it. But, yeah, that's where you can find me.
Fantastic. Evie, can people find you on the internet?
Nope.
Yay.
Fantastic. People can find me on the internet. I'm not going to tell you where. However, you can find the podcast and put it on the list on bsky.social. Put on the list on neocities.org. Anywhere major podcasts are sold, you can find us. Send us questions, comments, concerns. Send us emails at wifecitygaming@gmail.com.
Send us pictures of your pets.
Share us with your friends, your family, people who enjoy a bunch of queer women yelling at each other about movies. Goodbye.
What we view's connected by cast or crew, deciding the next film, that's the gist. Put it on the list.